What's up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week, Shopify.com. Now, can we talk about notifications for a second? Who actually leaves those sounds on anymore? Well, okay, wait, besides that kind, because that sound means another sale on Shopify. Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify makes it easy to sell to anyone from anywhere. So whether you're looking for vintage tees or recipes for ghee, you can start selling with Shopify and join the platform, simplifying commerce for millions of your favorite businesses worldwide. With Shopify, you can create an online store that jives with your vibe, discover new customers, and grow the following that keeps them coming back. In fact, myself, Sam, and Johnny have all used Shopify at various points, and we highly recommend it. And if you want to check it out for yourself, you can get a free trial right now when you go to shopify.com/ilab. That's shopify.com/ilab. Now, it's important that the ilab is all lowercase, so you can start selling online today by checking out shopify.com/ilab. I'm going to tell you even more about Shopify during the break in the show, but for now, let's kick off this episode of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hello and guten Morgen. This is your host, Johnny FD, and welcome to episode 250 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm with my friend, Derek, the Destroyer Sparts. Welcome to the show.
Welcome in, Johnny.
Welcome in, yeah. Super good. Guten Tag.
So I'm going to assume you're in Germany.
Nine. But close. I'm very close, but I'm not in Germany, sir.
I don't think you're in Austria because it's expensive there.
Maybe my boy Schwarzenegger has a family home.
Right?
Okay. Well, where else could I be?
Well, you wouldn't be speaking German if I don't know, unless you're throwing me off here. I need to pull up a map. Maybe I'm geography is off. I'm going to say this because I actually, the second time I had to get to the map today, because Sam just informed us over an email that he's in Tajikistan.
I know where that was. So first off, how crazy is it that we never know where Sam is? Like, I'm kind of a bit more predictable. Ever. And he just goes on these stints where he's like, all right, I'm going to take off for 10 days and I'm not going to bring my microphone. Maybe we should just get him like a super small microphone or something, like a clip-on lapel mic or something.
Seriously, even those little travel ones you have would work, and they take up like the size of like four Sharpies.
Yeah. So maybe, yeah, let's chip in from the iLab budget. Let's get him a little portable mic.
I think we can carve that out, and we'll just take it out of Sam's salary. So the funny part is, not to go on a rant about Sam, but he told me he's going to be gone for 10 days, but that was like 15 days ago. So I was like, oh, Sam's good to go. Now he's in the Middle East. So that's what we're dealing with here on the show, guys.
Well, when Tajikistan calls, you have to come.
I can't wait to see whatever crazy investment he has in there. So it's good content for you guys, I guess, is the moral of that. My guess, though, Johnny, I'm going to say the Netherlands.
They speak Dutch, sir.
I know, but isn't it kind of related?
No.
Okay, I have absolutely no idea where you're at then.
Okay, well, have you ever been to Liechtenstein?
No, I have not.
Well, me neither. So you were correct earlier. I am in Austria.
Oh,
but
okay.
You are also correct that I would never come here and pay for it because it is expensive.
It is. I had like a 10-hour like stopover in Vienna on a train, and that's pretty much my extent. So I've taken a train through Austria, but I haven't really spent any significant time through there.
Yeah, Austria is really nice. beautiful, like really beautiful city center, huge statues and buildings, way bigger than in Germany or any other countries. And they have good forests. I'm actually in a very small town. My friend called it a village, but I'm pretty sure it's a town. And it's somewhere in northern Austria.
Oh, so you're up. Are you close to Germany then? Or no?
Yeah, like... he said I can. Yeah, he basically said I can either fly into Munich or into Vienna. And either way, it's going to be like a 2-3 hour trip to his town. Oh, so.
You know what, Johnny? You should fly into Munich because Oktoberfest is going on until Sunday, if you can get there by then.
Yeah. Well, you also realize how expensive it is to fly.
I do, because I was planning to take a trip to Oktoberfest, and I was trying to do the whole the point thing to get a flight. And let me tell you, prices have gone way up, even if you're using points.
Yeah, absolutely. I did get my butt saved in London with points, though, because... it was £150 a night for the worst hotel room in London, which at the time was about 170.
Nasty hotel.
And it was a terrible hotel, basement hotel, no window. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, I can't live in this much of a shithole and pay this much money. It drains my soul. So the choice was either to leave the country or find some other solution. Luckily, I had some friends who could host me, but not until, you know, a few days later. And luckily, I had some Marriott points. And surprisingly, they didn't charge very much. Like, the points were, you know, kind of the same anywhere in the world. 15,000 points, which is, you know, probably $150. But that's kind of what a Marriott costs anyways.
Mm-hmm. No, that sounds awesome. I'm trying to get better about the whole point system. It's just, like, too much going on. But I have a fat stack of Amex points. I need to go on a nice trip here soon.
Yeah, I should have called you and said, "Hey, Derek, can you book me a room in London?"
Yeah, just $1 a point, Johnny.
Yeah. Well, now luckily I'm staying at a friend's place. He has an extra spare room in Austria, and they just had a baby. So I figured I'd come out, hang out for a week, meet the baby, help them out a little bit, and just have a place to chill while things in Ukraine calm down.
Yeah, very nice. So why don't you give us a super quick update, and then we'll jump into who we got on the show. What's the status of you just revealed to us that you were going to have permanent residency in Ukraine. Any update on that?
Yeah, I have tentatively been approved, and they're sending the paperwork in the mail here, actually. So I have to wait for it, and it could take up to 10 days. And that's why I'm kind of waiting around one spot. But also, it's a good time because today, as we're recording, Russia just announced that they've that 97% of Ukrainians wanted to, like, give up their territory or something, some, you know, BS number. So Russia is gonna, you know, try to claim it, and they might use tactical nukes to defend their new stolen territory. So we don't know what's gonna happen in the next few weeks. So it's actually good that I'm kind of sitting this one out.
Yeah, totally wild times that we are in, and 100% believable, even though it was only 97% though on that election.
You know, what's funny is I saw a video of them counting the ballots, and the person counting them, like, first off, they weren't even looking at it. They were just kind of counting paper. And then second, you could tell all the ballots were completely blank. So they were just counting, like, blank pieces of paper.
To be fair to that person, what a boring job. I mean, I'm so ADD, no. I'd be distracted after, like, three votes. I'd be like, there was, like, 112 there.
Yeah. So anyway, Ukraine Twitter has been fun. I've been kind of trolling and reposting on there. But turns out there's a... something else that kind of grew from Twitter.
Yeah. So we're talking to StockTwits. Now, this is a name that I've known about for a long time, and I didn't really know their origins. I just thought they were some Twitter account that followed stocks and, like, shared information on it. And I think I've actually followed them for a ton of years. I didn't realize that they're their own separate platform, and they did a lot of cool things, like invented the hashtag, which I use for everything now. Anytime I write a stock ticker down, it's just habit that I put a dollar sign in front of it, even if you can't even click on that to search anything. It's become, like, ubiquitous in our culture, especially since we're always talking investments and I got to write stock tickers all the time. I put a dollar sign in front of it every time. And that's because of StockTwits.
Yeah, actually, it's cool that they kind of thought that up, because it was an easy way to differentiate between, you know, if you're talking about Apple's kind of latest you know, iPhone or product, or you're talking about their stock, you know. And I think with other companies, like let's say like Nestle, right? You could literally be talking about chocolate bars, or you could be talking about, you know, like they're
making money like, off chocolate bars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they do so much. I mean, it's not like it's literally like it could be about anything. So it is a great way to differentiate between in conversation to help filter and find, you know, these conversation threads.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. So we're going to take a kind of a deeper dive into what StockTwits actually is. And I think you'll find some similarities to this with another episode we did, I don't know, about 6 months ago or so. We talked to Common Stock, which I know Johnny was using, and I actually still use quite a bit. I really enjoy Common Stock. I post on there every once in a while. You can even look at one of my stock portfolios on there. I think, Johnny, your portfolio is on there as well.
Yeah, you know what's cool about it is I set it up just that once, and then it just automatically refreshes. So I haven't logged in since, you know, a week after the episode. But, you know, for anyone who follows me, it's still on there.
Yeah, and that's episode 212, if you bosses want to go back and take a listen to that. A lot of similarities between the two. I think StockTwits has quite a few more users. So I did download StockTwits, and I'll have some thoughts about it when we come back after the interview, and kind of comparing it to what I thought of Common Stock as well. But with that, I think we'll jump into it. So it's CEO Rishi Khanna. He's at StockTwits. He's been there just over 2 years, and obviously a lot of things have changed since COVID and the influx of retail investors. So we'll jump into that. Things that we talk about are like the Reddit. What's it called? Wall Street Bets, things like that.
Yep.
Lots of good information in this interview that you bosses will learn about.
Yeah. So stay till the end, where Derek and I will leave some commentary, and we'll talk about what we think of the platform, about individual investing, kind of what we're up to. And also, before you guys go on, you know, StockTwits or Common Stock and look for, you know, at Johnny FD, I'm not under that name. I wanted to keep it semi-private because it is my portfolio. So it's for the patrons only. So it's in there somewhere on the Common Stock episode. So you can follow me through that link only. But let's take a listen and we'll jump right back in.
This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Shopify.com. Now, I want to tell you guys about my personal story with Shopify. Now, I'm sure most of you out there had all kinds of crazy business ideas when you were coming up. So did I. I sold like everything. I'm talking sunglasses, candles, bicycles, everything. I thought I could sell it and be rich overnight. Well, guess what? None of that worked. In fact, I didn't have a successful e-commerce campaign until I actually used Shopify. Now, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that I worked in the music business, and what better place to sell merch for your fans than online? That's when I found Shopify, and we were able to create a hefty side revenue for our artists and hence for our business who manage those artists. Shopify was so easy and straightforward. In minutes, you can have an online store up and running, and then you'll be hearing this sound multiple times a day. If you want to check it out now, there is a free trial going on. All you got to do is go to shopify.com/ilab. That's shopify.com/ilab. Make sure that ilab is all lowercase. One more time, get your free trial today at shopify.com/ilab.
Okay, bosses, I have a special guest on the other end. We're talking to the CEO of StockTwits. I have Rishi Khanna on Invest Like a Boss. Thank you for joining the show.
Hey, Derek. Thank you for having me.
So I'm really excited about this platform because I think that this just started out as just a regular Twitter account, if I'm correct. Can you kind of give us some of the origins of StockTwits and how it's evolved to 2022?
Yeah. So, I mean, StockTwits, you know, was founded about 14 years ago, and it didn't start as a Twitter account per se. It actually was originally built on top of Twitter. For those of you that have been on Twitter long enough, as I have, back in the day, Twitter, you know, had an open API and people could build on top of it. So that was where StockTwits originally started, on top as kind of a filter on top of Twitter for just investing and trading conversation. You know, StockTwits, I believe, I want to say it was 2009, you know, we pioneered the cash tag, which is now ubiquitous right across the landscape. But pretty much since 2010, you know, StockTwits, we're our standalone platform, you know, a verticalized social community, one of the largest ones out there for individual investors and traders. So, you know, kind of a long and rich history, have organically grown over the last, you know, 14-ish years to, you know, 6 million plus strong member community. And still a lot more to do ahead for us.
That's really interesting. So I guess I didn't realize it was kind of integrated into Twitter, which makes a lot of sense. I'm so old. I remember Twitter when you had to like text with it. Do you remember that?
Same. Yeah. I was on Twitter. I joined in 07. So yeah, I totally remember the texting. That's how you got in.
I think I was like I'm going to say like 2007 or 2008 when I started. I worked at a radio station and someone told me about Twitter and I was like, this is stupid. I don't want text messages all day.
yeah. I mean, what a long way we've come. What a world we're in now, right?
Definitely. And I'm glad you brought up the cash tag, because I wanted to ask you about that. For those who aren't familiar, I'm sure everyone's seen it. You maybe don't know it's called a cash tag. Just like a hashtag works, you can search terms. If you're looking up a stock ticker, let's say Tesla, TSLA, you would put a dollar sign before it. And it is searchable, and you can see every time someone's talking about Tesla or something like that. I find that even if I'm not on Twitter, if I'm on some other platform or just writing something, it's become habit now where I'll put the dollar sign in front of the ticker no matter what.
Yeah, it really has become ubiquitous as, you know, kind of that indicator that, hey, I'm talking about, you know, a stock, or even, you know, sometimes people use it like just talking about the company, right? You might write, you know, dollar sign Apple instead of, you know, dollar sign AAPL. And I think that for StockTwits, that was one of the, you know, real differentiators. And one of the interesting things that StockTwits did early that I think led to our community's growth is organizing conversations around the cash tag. So instead of having to search for it, right, you can go to StockTwits, you can go to AAPL, and you can, you know, see the whole conversation, you know, on Apple, as long as people are posting with that cash tag. And so, you know, just changing the organizing principles of the conversation, of how information is organized, you know, led to the rise of StockTwits and, you know, our, you know, very active and engaged community around conversations around these symbols. And you know, we now apply it to, you know, things beyond just, you know, stocks, right? We use it for crypto and, you know, essentially any asset that we introduce or security that we introduce as a conversation point on StockTwits, you know, we can cash tag it, right? And it just gives it like that unique way to understand, okay, hey, we're talking about this, you know, stock or crypto or NFT or whatever it might be.
It is very cool, a little piece of culture that StockTwits kind of introduced to the world. So let me talk about your background, because I creeped on your LinkedIn and I got to say, your LinkedIn is even longer than mine, which is saying a lot, because I've had a lot of jobs, but so have you. So it looks like you've been in a lot of startups, tech, finance space. What started your journey of your career to get to StockTwits where you're at now?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm an engineer by background, and I, you know, kind of graduated in the dot-com era. And actually I did my first startup in the dot-com days, and that was, you know, not finance centric at all. That was an e-commerce and content platform kind of in the music entertainment industry. We built an e-commerce platform for, you know, kind of hip hop and that genre. And so, you know, but dot-com crash came and, you know, that ended that, kind of startup there, and kind of went back to my engineering roots and joined a small, you know, what would now be called a fintech company, but doing data visualization, heat maps, specifically building heat maps for, you know, for the markets. Bloomberg's heat maps were powered by our platform. I actually built the first web version, which NASDAQ used for, I think, 10 plus years on NASDAQ.com, you know, their NASDAQ 100 heat map. That was actually software I built way back. And that was my entry into kind of the world of, you know, finance and tech. you know, from there was fortunate to, you know, go to a company called Gerson Lehrman Group, which is big in the expert network realm. You know, and I spent most of my career in the alternatives kind of hedge fund space. So started my next company in 07, co-founded it with a couple of co-founders, building analytics tools and platforms for the LP community actually first. You know, how did we help pensions and endowments and family offices and sovereign wealth better manage their hedge fund investments specifically at first and give them better insights into their hedge fund portfolios? And, you know, this was 2007. So you can imagine the first few years of that company and, you know, was there a long time. We actually, you know, Novus was just acquired last year by SEI, which is another big player in the kind of financial software space. So so spent a long time there. And in between, you know, LinkedIn isn't like a necessarily great, some of their UX is lacking a little, but yeah, I did work with and advise a number of startups. You know, I'm kind of a, I've been a startup and, you know, kind of building businesses junkie since, you know, since the 90s, you know, kind of love tech, love how, you know, it can change and impact industries. You know, having spent so much time in fintech and I've known StockTwits for a long time, the one of the co-founders and I've been friends since, you know, I think 2010, 2011. And, you know, the opportunity presented itself in late 2019 to, you know, come on board at StockTwits. And obviously, you know, I joined in early 2020 and then we know what happened in 2020. And, but that's what got me here. And, you know, I think the exciting thing to me and why I, you know, kind of came over to StockTwits is, was the community at first, right? Was, hey, we built this amazing, or the team had built this amazing, highly engaged community, very much organically, right? We don't really spend any money on marketing and historically the company hasn't. So organically built up, you know, this millions of members community, super active on a daily basis, highly engaged. And that's rare. That's really hard to do. I could give you $1 billion tomorrow, Derek, and you might not be able to recreate that because it's, you know, it does take, you know, that special sauce you'd have to capture in social and community. And I felt like, you know, that was a great foundation and starting point, but there was so much more value still to deliver to the community. And so that's what brought me over and, you know, kind of how my journey shaped up.
You know what? Feel free to give me $1 billion. I won't be competition for you. You'll be fine. I'm glad you brought up 2020 because I did find it interesting that you started right around the time that the pandemic started. What was there a reason for that? Were the markets in such turmoil that they're like, hey, we need to get someone new in here? What was the situation for you coming in? And how have you seen the landscape change? Because obviously we saw an influx in retail investors. Everybody's sitting at home. They have more time. They have more money because they weren't going out and they weren't spending that extra money. And they're like, hey, I should invest. What have you seen change? So why did you start in 2020? And what patterns have you seen change since then to now where we're almost at the end of 2022?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I started obviously before COVID. So, you know, I had agreed to, you know, start the role in late 2019. And then it was just a matter of, you know, giving, you know, reasonable notice to my previous firm and stuff. So, so, you know, wasn't any, you know, specific COVID related reason to start. I think what was exciting to me was, you know, that the team was really looking to now, you know, move up the value chain and deliver more value to the community, you know, than had historically been done. And so that was exciting, right? I'm like, awesome, let's do this. Let's, you know, build it, you know, bigger and deliver more value. And then obviously 2020 happened and, you know, the way I like to describe 2020, right, is it's almost like kind of an ER where, you know, the first quarter was chaos, you know, and then the second quarter was kind of like triage. And then the third quarter was recovery. You know, and this is from a kind of a business and tech perspective, right? And then, you know, fourth quarter and onward was more about, okay, hey, now we can start kind of doing stuff because we got through this crazy period. And you know, 2020 was both, you know, a gift and a curse from a product perspective, right? Obviously not from a social and global, you know, human perspective.
Sure.
But from a product perspective, you know, on one hand, there was this increased interest, you know, in investing and trading. It was the only game in town, right? Like literally there was nothing else to do. You couldn't go to work. You couldn't, you know, watch sports, Netflix stopped, you know, companies stopped producing shows. And so there were only so many new shows coming out and stuff to binge. And so, you know, but the markets were open, right? The markets kept going. And so obviously, you know, we've now, you know, kind of talked about that over the last couple of years of the massive influx. But at the same time, from a business perspective, right? There was a lot of uncertainty. StockTwits has primarily historically been an ad-driven business. And so, you know, the ad markets in that first half of the year was, there was a lot of uncertainty. And so, you know, we had to kind of really, you know, think through things and manage the business well and be smart about it and go back to fundamentals and back to basics. And, you know, the team did a great job and we were very fortunate to, you know, come out of it, you know, with the benefits of thriving and the, you know, the benefits of making, you know, mostly the right calls on, you know, how to manage and grow and build our business. And so, you know, at that kind of fundamental level, we were fortunate, but yeah, we saw the rise of a lot of interest, you know, from that next generation, from the millennials, from Gen Z world into the markets. And so you saw, you know, we saw tremendous growth in 2021, you know, 50% growth in our audience. We saw tremendous growth in 2020. And so, you know, a lot of people joined the markets and got exposure to it that maybe, you know, hey, they knew what obviously stocks were to some degree, but they weren't really participating. Sure. And, you know, statistically, we knew that, hey, millennials and Gen Z weren't participating at the same rate as, you know, older generations like myself and beyond. And so, you know, that influx created a lot of interest in the markets and we were able to capture that. And what we've seen is, you know, the rise of that, but then, hey, the 2022 has been a very different year for the markets. And obviously, you know, the world has opened back up by and large. Obviously, there are still very challenging issues with COVID, but by and large, I'd say, you know, the world has opened up. The markets have not fared as well this year, and we will jump in that, I'm sure.
Yeah, as we're recording this, one of the worst weeks in many, many years of the market.
Yeah, we still, you know, I haven't actually looked in like an hour or so.
I just looked right before this, unfortunately. Can you tell us about some numbers, though? How many registered users do you have and how many of those users are active? Are you able to provide some of that data?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, at a high level, while providers, you know, we have, you know, over 6 million, close to 7 million, you know, registered users on the platform. And, you know, the activity, you know, we kind of measure that in like kind of monthly audience. And, you know, our monthly audience is, you know, there's a wide range kind of depending on activity and stuff, but, you know, can hover around 5 million monthly, you know, sometimes it goes lower, you know, at the peak in 2021, our monthly audience was well over 10 million. You sure. know, those, you know, kind of that GameStop frenzy of January, February.
Is there any kind of data on how often people are logging into StockTwits? Are they going every day or is it once a week? What kind of data are you seeing there?
Yeah, you know, I don't think of it or look at it necessarily that way. And I'm sure we have that data. I don't have that off the top of my head. But what I will say is, you know, our users are highly engaged. So the average time, you know, on site on a per day basis for our engaged users is, you know, close to an hour. So between 30 and 60 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, because again, when you think about it, hey, they're following conversations, they're jumping, you know, from symbol to, you know, the stocks that they're interested, or they're looking to see, hey, what is the, you know, market, what's trending? You know, what's one of our very popular features is, you know, trending tickers, which is essentially a measure of, hey, what stocks are being talked about, you know, a lot more right now, more than their norm, right? So it's not just volume, because that would like always be like the Teslas and stuff of the world, but rather it's about this kind of standard deviation from the norm. So, you know, whether it's, you know, Adobe this week and, you know, their announcement of Figma and earnings, or, you know, FedEx yesterday in the earnings stuff, or, you know, I think, you know, Getty Images is trending today and a couple others. So, you know, we get a lot of it, you know, deep engagement. People are spending, you know, over 30 minutes a day on the site, close to, you know, an hour. And so, you know, so those are, I think, some of the numbers there. And, you know, on a registered user basis, we have hundreds of thousands of daily active users, you know, on the site that are registered. And then we have a lot of, you know, users that come that are not registered that are just there to kind of consume the streams.
Great.
So, yeah.
So I assume that the U.S. is your biggest territory. If not, you know, you can tell me any other significant countries, maybe like your top five, where your users are from.
Yeah, so you are correct. US is our biggest, kind of community. After that, historically, it has been Canada. And when I joined, actually, one of the things, we identified is, listen, we actually have a really big opportunity here. We haven't, expanded internationally like we should. And so we did this year launch in India. And so we're, been very fortunate to have a great team kind of in India on the ground, close to 15 people now there that are building, the StockTwits India community and platform. So that's been growing in that very recent launch. And then, we do intend to launch over the coming months and quarters in a lot more countries. And for what that means for us is, adding the data and the symbols and the tickers. So, the hashtags exist to have the conversation around that, right? So, that means, hey, we got to go get the licenses from the exchanges to stream the data and get all this data and stuff. And then, build communities around it. So, US, Canada, India is a big effort and investment for us. We're really excited about that. A lot of great things happening there. And then we will be launching in other countries in the coming months and quarters.
That totally makes sense. When I actually searched StockTwits on Twitter, StockTwits India did come up as well. So I'm glad you were able to clear up, why that's maybe a separate entity. Obviously a huge market for you guys to take advantage. Can you tell us about some of the assets that you can research on StockTwits? Is it strictly stocks? Are you in crypto? Any other kind of alternative investments? What's kind of the focus of it? And are you able to pretty much investigate any kind of investment on the platform?
Yeah. So, our two big, where we have real liquid conversations and focus is equities and crypto. Crypto we've had for a number of years at this point. I want to say, 2022? I want to say, five or six years, we introduced the crypto cash tags onto the platform. So large communities around things like, Bitcoin, Ethereum, et cetera. So very active, robust communities and conversations there. But we have, started testing and rolling out other asset classes as well. And, so we have some NFTs on there and some NFT communities. We are thinking about alternatives in the form of private companies, alternatives in the form of, a lot of these Reg A platforms, so you can think about collectibles, you can think about artwork, you can think about, fractionalized like access to private equity, et cetera, real estate. For those assets, I think one of the key things, when we think about new asset classes, we want to be able to give you more context. So we don't want to just kind of put a cash tag up and, hey, hope people come. We want to be able to give you context, and context is often going to be in the form of data. So, when we will go out and formally introduce, new asset classes, we will absolutely, kind of want to bring in data and give you that rich context for that security or asset class. But ultimately, our vision is we want StockTwits to be the global platform for people to talk about all the different kinds of assets that, individuals can invest in. We're not focused really on the institutional community. We're very much focused on the individuals globally.
So what do you say to someone, let's say an individual retail investor that asks you, how can StockTwits make them a better investor or get them bigger gains?
Yeah. So, I think there's a few layers to that, right? And obviously individual investors have all different styles, have all different risk tolerances, right? You have, value-oriented, long-term, fundamental investors on one end, and then you have, swing momentum traders, day traders on the other end, and everything in between. And so, I think the first important thing to say is investing is not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. And so to that, I think where StockTwits really helps is, one, giving you the ability to find your tribe and discover, other individuals that have shared styles, shared risk, shared interest in investing, because that's not always your friends, right? Just because, you might talk to, with your friends about the markets doesn't mean that those friends have the same style, have the same risk tolerance. And so being able to find it on a global platform and an open community can really help you, kind of find people to share ideas with. And, when I think about the investing life cycle, the ideation and the research and then the portfolio management that goes into, managing your personal investments and your personal trading, that's where finding that community matters. So I think one of the first things where we really help is find your community, find, you know, like-minded investors and traders to help you either flush out your ideas, you know, or generate new ideas that you want to look at and investigate and have the conversations around them. I think that's a really powerful part about community and social. I think the other element to that is, and you'll hear me say this a lot, is I do fundamentally believe investing and trading is very much an apprenticeship game, meaning, you know, you learn from others. You have to, you know, take the swings and at bats to build the skill sets and to build, you know, the experience and expertise. You know, you're not going to just get it by reading a book or whatnot. And so if you want to be an active participant in the market, if you want to be a self-directed participant in the market, you know, finding the people that you want to learn from, right? So if you're a technical analyst or, you know, and you like technical trading, hey, we have, you know, tons of users on the platform that are, you know, great to follow and learn from and see how they think about charts and whatnot. And on the other end, if you want to, you know, talk about, you know, fundamentals or, you know, like real business fundamentals and, you know, value oriented type of investing, then there's other communities and groups to follow, again, to learn from. And hey, how do, you know, I was reading, you know, one of our community members streams the other day, and he was chatting about how he thinks about, you know, stop losses and risk management on, you know, his portfolio, especially in markets like, you know, 2022, you know, risk management and downside protection is an important thing if you're going to be in the markets and be a player. And so it was really interesting for me to read, you know, how he thought about it and, you know, just kind of take some, you know, bits away. So I think, you know, finding your tribe, finding a style, and then, you know, having the opportunity to, you know, learn through that, you know, if you're a newer participant, are some of the really strong opportunities on StockTwits and then ideation, research management. And we have a lot of things, you know, coming out for the future around that, you know, kind of investing life cycle to give you the tools and data.
Great. Yeah. I like the sense of community that you're creating. On a related note, we know that, you know, a community can drive stocks up or down, especially significantly when we saw like the Wall Street Bets chaos, like AMC, GameStop, things like that. Yeah. When all that chaos was going on in the market, what kind of reactions were you seeing on the StockTwits platform when these stocks were going out of control?
You know, I'll be perfectly honest. We were just doing our best to keep the servers up. those couple of weeks were crazy. I mean, the volume we had on a few of those, you know, the GameStops and the AMCs of the world was, you know, it was fast and furious, right? And so what I'll say about that is, I think it's great for, you know, individuals in the retail community to be able to share at scale and communicate at scale out in the public, right?
I agree.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like, this is people learning together. You know, this was an idea, like, hey, the GameStop trade was an idea that, you know, had been percolating for 9 months prior to that, right? It wasn't like all of a sudden it just happened in 1 minute, right? I mean, I think the foundations of it were laid the summer before, when, you know, what's his name, and, you know, kind of shared the thoughts and, you know, hey, the short exposure, and, you know, why shouldn't individuals be able to communicate and share this, you know, very specific outlier opportunity, right? It's not like there's 100 of these a day. This was a once in a, you know, kind of blue moon type, you know, kind of trade that was put on. And so, you know, just the coordination of communities to be able to kind of talk and keep supporting it. Now, you know, listen, you got to be smart about, you know, the risk management and the money and, you know, investing and stuff. But, you know, it was a very specific trade, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
All right. Well put. I want to ask you about, maybe, I guess, not really related, but potentially could be, do you have a team kind of looking out for potentially maybe fraudulent or dangerous trades or a pump and dump situation that someone's really promoting? Maybe you have a standout user that you, a trade looks a little fishy. Have you guys seen anything like that? Do you have a team that looks out for that?
Yeah. So, you know, what I'll start by saying is, you know, that is one of the biggest challenges of social media, period. Right.
And that's, sorry to interrupt you. That's one of the reasons I get really frustrated looking up cash tags just directly on Twitter, because it just seems like a ton of fraud or fake accounts promoting some crap stock or whatever it may be.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the challenge of generalist platforms like a Twitter that, you know, have to serve, you know, tons of audiences and aren't just focused on the vertical of investing and trading like we are, you know, they don't, that's not a thing that they can really keep up with. Right. And so, you know, and social and community moderation, community management is hard. It is by no means like a perfect thing. And, you know, it's really hard for Twitter. It's really hard for Facebook. It's really hard for Reddit. And those are massive in scale compared to us. But the problems are actually exactly the same once you've hit a certain amount of scale. Now, you know, they have thousands of engineers and people working on this. You know, we have a couple. So, sure. You know, the resource level is different. Now, I will say, you know, there's two layers. There's actually three layers that how we attack this. And so the first is, you know, just a technical layer. You know, we have third party, systems that we leverage that are integrated, that are helping to detect, you know, kind of the more obvious stuff, and like bot attacks and stuff like that, that can be easily determined by technology. So we do invest in that. It's actually one of our biggest line item expenses for a small company like us. So we do invest in that. The second layer there is actually the community itself, right? So giving them the tools to report things that are, you know, suspect or violate our house rules, maybe, you know, kind of the abusive and that type of stuff. But also, hey, you know, if somebody's posting completely, you know, kind of ridiculous, you know, data or information about, you know, companies or stocks. So the community has the ability to report that. And then the third layer that goes along with the community moderation is we have built up a moderation team, you know, and today we're up at, I think, 6 or 7 people on that team. But when I joined, we actually just had one person managing the entire community of, you know, millions of users. So it is a place that we've invested in extremely hard. There's no way to get it perfect. Like, you will never have that perfect and clean. We're actually working on a number of new ideas and investigating a number of new technologies to kind of keep helping us, you know, attack this and take this challenge on. But yeah, we are very much, you know, sensitive to that. We're never going to be perfect. It's impossible to be perfect. We just hope to kind of keep getting better and better at it, you know, working with our community and working with our community, you know, kind of support and moderation team to attack the problem.
That's good to know. Richie, if you don't mind, I have a couple questions from some of our Patreon members, if you wouldn't mind answering that. These are some kind of our bigger listeners of Invest Like a Boss that get the ability to ask questions to our guests.
Cool.
So let's start off with Marco Battaglia. He asks, is there a way to reward users who share profitable investments or show their portfolios that have worked? You can share your portfolio, I believe, on StockTwits. And They're just wondering, you know, let's say you have a user that's been crushing trades. Is there any kind of rewards program to highlight these users?
You know, I'm glad Marco asked that question. We just spent, a good amount of time this morning. And that was one of the items on our agenda from a product perspective. It's something we've thought about a lot and we've started work on it. You know, I can't really share too much more right now, but it is absolutely something we want to, you know, kind of have as a part of the foundation of, you know, kind of community, right? How do we reward the community for, you know, positive contributions, you know, longevity, et cetera, and, you know, portfolio and good trades and things around that are absolutely an element there. We don't have it today. So, you know, I don't want to imply that it exists right now, but it is something in the works, and we'll be happy to kind of share more in the coming kind of months.
Good to know you're working on that, because I think that could potentially be a really big win. Chris Young asks, this reminds me of Common Stock. I'm not sure if you're aware of them. We did actually have Common Stock on our show about 6 months ago or so, and I am a personal user of it and I do enjoy it. But Chris asks, he says he hasn't downloaded the app yet, but he's just wondering, do you have some kind of performance tracking, top members or something that makes you stand out, and what differentiates you from Common Stock if you're familiar with them?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, Common Stock, David, the good guys, over there, right. You know, they're a relatively newer entrant than us. And, you know, from a scale and liquidity of conversation perspective, significantly smaller.
Yeah. He wasn't able to give me exact user numbers, but just from using it enough, I think their audience is quite a bit smaller than yours.
Yeah. But you know, regardless, you know, I think they have a little bit of a different approach. Now we do have a number of similar elements. We actually haven't released our leaderboards feature yet, but you know, we have similar things for the portfolio side of stuff. So yeah, you know, but you know, I think we emphasize things a little bit differently, where we don't take a hardcore opinion on how you should be investing, meaning we don't say, hey, it's just about fundamentals and, you know, traditional kind of, you know, Wall Street, you know, memos type world, which is, you know, I think where you see a lot more of the common stock focus. We say, hey, there's a lot of different types of investors in the world. Mm-hmm. There are traders that have different styles and techniques, and we want to be a place for all the communities and, you know, for all the individuals to come and gather and learn and communicate and, you know, deliver you tremendous data and tools. So, you know, I think our remit, our kind of view of the world is a bit broader of how we approach it.
Great. And just to be clear on, if you are sharing your portfolio on StockTwits, you're not shown actual dollar amounts, correct? Just percentages, I assume.
Correct.
And then
absolutely.
Also, what do you have to say to someone who, you know, they're putting a 6, 7, 8 figure maybe portfolio on the platform? What kind of security do you have around that?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we very much have, you know, kind of all the, you know, kind of bank level security. We don't actually, you know, if you're connecting your portfolios from third parties, right, like a TD Ameritrade or something of that nature, we don't store your credentials. You know, we don't keep any of that. So we do take security on that front very seriously. And so, you know, rest assured. And then we definitely don't share the dollar amounts and stuff, right? It's strictly positions, percentages, and, you know, kind of that standard high level stuff that, you know, doesn't disclose kind of, you know, the specifics of how much money you might be investing or how much exposure you might have.
Great. That's good to know. Do you mind answering some fun questions before we get out of here?
I like fun questions.
All right. Who are some of your favorite users? Maybe you don't pick favorites, but who are some of the standout users that you follow on StockTwits?
You're gonna put me on. I have a couple users. You know, we also have users that have private rooms as well that we enable them, and they're able to actually charge access for and stuff. So there's a couple of those users I like as well. So one of the users I follow, obviously, you know, a lot of people on StockTwits follow Howard Lindzen, who's one of our co-founders and, you know, kind of a very active market participant. So Howard's a fun follow, super active on the platform. I'm a fan of, you know, guys like GPASA on the platform. You know, I follow him. You know, I follow a number of like kind of the media platforms that are on as well. One of the private rooms I subscribe to that I, you know, think is interesting. And this is all personal. This is not StockTwits advice. This is not financial advice. You know, right. Do your own research, all that fun stuff. But like, you know, I follow Jonah Lupton has a room on StockTwits where he shares a lot of his trading and stuff. So, you know, tremendous number of amazing follows, to be had on StockTwits. You got to find, you know, what your style is, what your community is, and, you know, go from there.
Do you have any stories of personal investing success where you found an idea off StockTwits and it worked out?
The irony of my job is I don't actually have a lot of time to actively invest in and trade.
Sure.
I do follow a number of, you know, in my portfolio, right? I obviously track a lot of those and like look at the conversation stuff. I am not the most active of traders. Just, you know, I think it's one of those things that takes time, and I've been really focused on building the product and the platform. So I don't have a lot of time for that.
That's a super boring answer. No,
it is a super boring answer. Super boring. You know, I wish I had a better one.
Boring is good. We unfortunately for my portfolio, we like to dabble a little bit in most of the people that we have on, and it usually doesn't work out for the best. So we found the long-term just sit and hold. It seems to be the best play.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I really do think, I mean, a lot of the stuff is, hey, you got to be on top of it. And again, the irony of my job is there are days I spend, you know, 8-12 hours on calls and in meetings, and I have to check in with the team on Slack, be like, what the hell's happening in the market? Because I don't know. I've been on Zoom calls all day, right?
Exactly. Totally makes sense. Just messing with you a little bit. I do want to ask, though, from a personal standpoint, I come from a music background, and you said one of the first positions you had was doing e-commerce for hip hop artists. Can you talk about any of the artists that you worked with?
Well, we weren't doing it specifically for artists. We were actually, you know, back in the 90s, you know, what I would like to, you know, call, you know, the golden era of, you know, kind of the rise of hip hop. And you know,
I can agree with that because the new stuff is garbage.
You know, regardless of that, it was also like now it's just kind of all you know, kind of pop and mainstream, right? Like it mm-hmm. wasn't this thing. But so, you know, the observation, what we did was, hey, the access to, you know, if you remember all like the clothing brands that were coming up, even like yep. the music, like CDs, you know, DJing was becoming a thing. Now it's like, everyone's a DJ. Like who's not a DJ?
I know, right? all you need is a laptop like, and you're a DJ.
But like, I grew up in Rochester, New York, which is, you know, not a place in the 90s where it was easy to go buy that stuff, right? Or get mm-hmm. access to it, right? Like, yeah, you could go to the, you know, CD store in the mall and get some CDs and stuff, but that was about it. And so, you know, we looked at e-commerce as a great opportunity to actually give, you know, the rest of America, besides the few big cities that had easy access to that stuff, and open that up via e-commerce. Now it's like so mainstream that, you know, you can go to Macy's and get the stuff, you know, whatever. It's just, you know, regular.
Yeah, that's really cool, though. Last question before we get out of here. You had mentioned some of the things you're working on, like a rewards program, things of that nature. I think you just launched equities trading as well. Where do you see StockTwits 5 years from now, and what's kind of in the works?
Yeah, so we did, you know, recently launch via our subsidiary broker-dealer, ST Invest. We integrated equities trading for that. So now, you know, today on StockTwits, you can actually get crypto through our partnership with FTX US, as well as equities through our broker-dealer, ST Invest. So that's exciting. And I think the vision, as I alluded to earlier, and our opportunity is to deliver value, you know, with the community and social being at our foundation and at the you know, root of everything we do, but deliver value across the investing life cycle, from ideation to research to execution to portfolio management. And so, you know, we want to give you the best data. A lot of that data is a commodity. We want to just organize mm-hmm. it the best for you and give you access, so you don't have to jump around to five different sites, you know, to get X and to get Y and to get Z. You know, bring that together, you know, give you some of the best tools, and the tools from a social and community perspective too. Unique data sets that are unique to us from a social and community perspective, like our sentiment data and some of our activity and interest data that nobody else has. And so, you know, the vision is, you know, over the next 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it might be, is to be the global platform for the individual investing and trading community to, you know, manage their investing identity and their investing life cycles across, you know, whatever asset classes they want to be in.
I love it. Really exciting stuff going on over at StockTwits. It sounds like the future is bright. Where should our bosses go to learn more about StockTwits, download the app? Anywhere particular they should go?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think the app is great, right? Download the iOS or Android app, you know, in the Apple Store, just StockTwits or the Google Play Store for Android. Obviously, StockTwits.com for the web experience. But, you know, the markets are always live in there. And I think, you know, the app is where, you know, most of us are experiencing that. So, you know, go download it and join the community.
Very cool. Rishi Khanna, he is the CEO of StockTwits. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on and invest like a boss.
Thanks, Derek.
Hashtag AMC, hashtag GameStop, hashtag Nestle. Which one are you buying? Oh, no, hashtag. No, sorry. Dollar sign. Hashtag. It sounds the same, especially when you say it fast. You know, hashtag, Cash App.
That's true. So if you're talking today, another crazy market week, I'm going to buy Nestle. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, okay. A fun trivia. Can you name 4 brands under Nestle?
Well, one I'm looking at right now, it is Nespresso. I love my Nespresso coffee maker.
Yes. Okay.
I'm going to say Nestle Quick, the chocolate milk with the rabbit.
Yes. Very easy. Okay. That's an easy one.
Just Nestle chocolate in general, I guess. Like a Nestle Crunch Bar. Nestle Crunch Bar. How about that?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
What else? Oh, do they do the...
How about something without the word Nestle in it?
They make like everything. I should know this. Ooh. I can't name a brand that doesn't have Nestle in it. I failed. Final right. Jeopardy.
So for those in the audience, I'm sure you guys are screaming your names. I don't know how many brands they actually have, but it's probably...
It's gotta be in the hundreds.
I don't. Maybe not 100, but they have dozens, like probably 40 or 50. Okay, I'll name the ones that you probably have heard of. Okay, Alpo dog food, Purina.
Oh yeah,
Purina dog food.
Oh, I just thought of one. They make water too.
Yeah, Blue Bottle Coffee.
Oh, that really? Oh, that is.
Yep.
Crazy. Sorry, that's a ripoff, that Blue Bottle.
Yeah.
We have that all over LA.
Yeah, it's not that good. Carnation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Cheerios.
Cheerios, really? I thought that was General Mills.
Yeah. Well, maybe, I don't know.
Or maybe they own General Mills.
Sometimes, I don't know. Maybe or sometimes they kind of go back and forth. Okay, I'll give you a hint. Another ice cream brand. Two ice cream brands.
Maybe like Häagen-Dazs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And I think there's at least two more.
Like Ben & Jerry's or something?
Nestle. No. But Ben & Jerry's did get bought out by someone, but they were small.
Oh, ice cream. I don't eat that much ice cream, Johnny. I mean, I'm a weirdo like that.
Oh, no. I think you need to eat more. Dryers.
Oh, Dryers and Breyers. I think those are like the same
thing. Yeah. And also Milo, which is the one you find in Asia.
Oh, okay. Those are major brands already. And I don't think you even touched on a quarter of them.
I know. So, they're just, I mean, we could literally do a whole episode about them one day. Maybe we will. I think it would be actually interesting. But it is interesting following these individual companies and also the kind of the methods behind, investing in something like this versus another method like I do with the long-term holds.
And you know what I find really useful in that sense with StockTwits is if you have an idea and you think that you're wondering if anybody else is talking about that on the retail level, because it's so hard to access these giant financial firms and all their data. They keep everything locked up, of course, or charge thousands and thousands of dollars a month for services to look up stock ideas. Is you could just search on here, search a hashtag like Nestle and see what other people are talking about that stock. And you can maybe verify that your idea is good, or maybe it's not, or maybe you're the only one that had that thought. It's really interesting to kind of take a look into what other people are thinking that are kind of on your same level.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. It's also kind of an easy way to get into a echo chamber a bit, to find other people who, they just want to invest in, or they agree with the style of investing that you agree. I mean, this is why, if you get deep into anyone stock, whether it was GameStop or AMC or, into crypto, anything that has a huge cult following behind it, you end up in a little bit of an echo chamber. And that's what I'm afraid of.
All right. I see your point there. It's kind of like, just watching Fox News for your news. And it's just thinking that everyone that agrees with you has the same opinion as you. And therefore, everybody else should have the same opinion, too.
Yeah, that or also, if there's enough people on there and it sounds, and they have a huge audience, there's always going to be someone that has the same opinion as you. It might be a small group, but then it makes you feel like, maybe I'm onto something if these other people also feel the same way.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I like that. Speaking of, I'm looking up Nestle, what people are talking about on here, and there's a lot of articles just in the last week. There's probably 15, 20 posts on here about people talking about it. And some of the cool things I see is people have taken pictures that they've seen at stores of Nestle products or new products, things like that. So I think that's really useful to find out what's going on in the real world. Obviously you couldn't do that with a digital company like an Amazon or an Apple or something like that. But if you actually have a storefront and you can see products and things like that, or let's take for instance this awful, horrible investment that Sam and I both did. Probably the worst stock that we've ever bought was our vegan meat product.
Uh-huh.
Which is down. Hold on, I'm gonna pull it up for you. I'll see how much it is down. Oh, it makes me sad. Very good food company is down. Do do do. 96% since we bought it.
Wow. That is not good.
That's horrible. And I've pretty much written that one off at this point.
Wow.
But I've seen it in the stores. So if something like that, let's say it wasn't as dire as that, but if you saw it, Whole Foods started carrying this, or some major Kroger, or some major grocery store started carrying this, it obviously would be a boon for the stock, but it's something where I could see information like that. And I just think it's cool to see what people are talking about with that. Or if I search if I search that stock on StockTwits, I bet you it's crickets. Honestly, yeah, because no one wants anything to do with that.
Or unless people are just kind of hating on it and just yelling, saying, why did I ever buy this?
Yeah, exactly.
That and Beyond Meat, it looks like they've had a very similar fate where they've lost most of their value as well. I think the high was almost at $200, $196. What do you think Beyond Meat is at today?
Oh, if it's anywhere near what Very Good Food Company is on, it's like $5. But I'm going to say like $50.
It's at $15.
Oh, so they're not doing much better. I guess I don't feel as bad.
Yeah. And speaking of photos, the photo that made me realize these companies are not going to do very well is, I think it was during one of the hurricanes or something, where there's no food left on the shelf. You know, people were panic buying.
Except that.
I think it happened a few times. Yeah, everything was gone except all the vegan meats. It was so full.
The reason I did it was because it actually tastes good. But I get why people are hesitant to try it, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, candy bars also taste good.
That's true. You can't go wrong with that. The best in Nestle is the lesson here.
Absolutely. But, you know, it is there's always going to be a world where people are going to want to pick stocks and be, you know, have more knowledge than someone else. I think it's inherent in us. And there's going to be people who, you know, do well. I mean, for example, when Shopify was being shorted by Citron and Andrew left, because I was a Shopify user, I knew that he was full crap and his company is full crap. You know, when they said that, you know, Shopify was all fake and it was, you know, it was doomed to fail, I was like, no, this is the best e-commerce platform out there.
Right.
You know, there's, you know, and, you know, then I know for a fact that more than half the people using it are like me, these small businesses. A lot of us are, you know, places like in Thailand, you know, it's real businesses, you know, like I can see why he assumed that, you know, a outside of the US company, you know, entrepreneur was a scam. But it's like just people, you know, working in 2020, 2021, you know, where people were working online from everywhere. Like they were legitimate companies. And luckily I invested a little bit in there, but you know, if something like StockTwits was around, or if I was a user of StockTwits, you know, I could have had a whole thread about it and say like, look, this is what I think, you know, here's my kind of user, you know, insight knowledge. So I can see it being valuable, but at the same time, with all social media, it's so hard to tell if someone actually has some good insight knowledge or they just sound like they do on the internet.
Yeah, I totally agree. And full disclosure, in case anybody's wondering, Shopify is a sponsor of Invest Like a Boss. Johnny did not get paid to just plug their stock, but I've used Shopify too, and I love it. I think we're in agreement. That's why we allowed them to be a sponsor on the show. Anyways, I like that you could have gone on StockTwits and said, hey, guys, this is being shorted for no reason, and this is a great company. This is why I've seen success doing this, A, B, C, whatever it is. And I think posting that on a StockTwits or even common stock for that matter, like we mentioned before, is one further step to kind of legitimize that you're invested into this. Anybody can go on Twitter and talk trash about a stock or pump up a stock. If just search any cash tag on Twitter and check out they'll have the top tweets usually. Those are the kind of the ones that have been getting spread around more. Click on the latest tab and see how much BS is on Twitter, or just search like Bitcoin for that matter. Do $BTC and just hit the latest tab and you'll see how much shit is on Twitter.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So, you know, the internet is all about kind of filtering the information that you actually trust. One thing that I liked that you had mentioned was kind of rewarding people who had a good positive track record. The one thing I'm a bit worried about that is, you know, as we've read in, you know, countless books and through personal experience, you know, a gorilla flipping a coin 100 times, you know, like if you have enough gorillas, it's like they're going to get it all right. And if someone has a good track record, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to continue having a good track record, you know, just because they hit, you know, red on roulette, you know, 7 times in a row, it doesn't mean the 8th time is going to be red. And if anything, I would almost think that if someone earned that badge, and it would be in their best interest to start being conservative to kind of keep that, to keep the badge. And
oh, so they want to take as much risk to kind of hold their status.
Yeah. Like if it was me gaming the system, I would open, you know, multiple accounts and I would go, you know, ham in different directions.
See which one pays off.
And whichever one pays off, I'll have the accreditation and then that one will be my account.
And then you're just, and then it's just Johnny buying VTI every week.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, what's crazy is the friend I'm staying with, he finally got into investing and I thought he would have taken my advice of just dollar cost averaging into the S&P. But instead, he started paying $10 a month to some guy, some Turkish guy on Patreon who gives stock advice. And I said, why would you do that? And he said, well, you know, this guy's been right, you know, in the last, you know, so far in the last couple months, he has a great track record. And I'm like, yeah, like until he's not right. And, you know, it's like there's no clairvoyant. And, you know, this guy was really that smart. He'd already be a billionaire. He wouldn't be on Patreon, you know, giving stock tips for $10 a month. You know, if anything, people should be paying us $10 a month on our Patreon for admitting that
tell them not
there's
to
no
do that.
Such thing. Yeah, exactly. Like it would still be a better use of your money.
That's what I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask you about that. One of their ideas was to gate portfolios to kind of force you to pay a certain amount and then they'll take a percentage, just like Patreon, I guess. And then you would have access to someone's full portfolio, I guess, who was a top performer or whoever thought they were a top performer and was able to fool someone into doing that. I just didn't know what you thought about that, because it kind of reminds me of like, I'm a big football guy. I'm really into football now. We're in the deep in the NFL season and all these sports better guys, they'll talk about all these picks on a podcast for free. And then they'll go, well, if you want the real picks, you got to go pay for them on my site. It's like, well, what's all this crap you were just feeding me for the last hour? Are those not your real picks? And you're going to charge for the actual ones that you're going to bet on. So it just feels like a shell game almost. And I agree. If you're charging just $10 a month, if you need the $10 a month that bad, then you're not crushing it in the stock market.
Yeah. So do you want, okay. I'm going to teach you a little secret of if you wanted to, how you can be, you know, 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 and seem like a clairvoyant, right? You start making these stock picks and we could do this, but I'm not going to do it because this is a shady thing. Right. Mm-hmm. But what we can do, right? First off, like we can, you know, we can tell people the exact same thing. You know, we can be like, okay, here's our stock picks. If you want to sign up, if you want to, you know, the real information, sign up for our email list. Whether it's paid or not, it can be, you know, it can be a free list. And what we do is we segment that list into 2 or 4 different lists where we say, okay, to half the list, we say the Bengals are going to win. The other half, we say the Dolphins are going to win. You know,
okay, then, got ya.
And then whoever, whichever one we get right, you know, now we're 1 out of 1. So we say, okay, next week, the Saints are going to beat the Vikings. If we, you know, and then we segment that list. So every time our list actually cuts in half because we lose half our audience, you know, but eventually
winning.
Yeah, eventually, you know, we got the Lions over the Seahawks and the Packers over the Patriots, and people are like, oh my God, this guy's been 4 for 4. You know, what is it going to be? What's going to be then in the next one? And we say, well, now you have to join our super VIP list, you know, if you want that information.
Oh, I'm getting a read into the mind of Johnny right now.
Yeah. I mean, and this is
and,
why
and I hope your picks are wrong, yeah. Because you picked the Packers to win and you picked the Vikings to lose. Curse you, Johnny.
I don't know why. It literally almost doesn't matter. Like it literally, like in my mind, it's like I'm just naming, you know, I'll name both of them and then whatever, whichever one wins.
But
like,
yeah, let's say you start with 1,000 people and you segment, you got 5 picks, right? And you segmented it down to 200. That's 200 people that think you picked 5 for 5. And how much would you pay for someone that picked 5 out of 5 picks correct? Assuming you're like, you're not going to say you're not going to be 100% for the whole season, but if you got 5 in a row, that's something.
Yeah. And guess what? By the time you get, you know, 2 or 3 out of 3, you're going to be sharing that.
Oh, yeah. You're telling your friend, look at this. This guy's 100% every time.
Yeah. And then they're going to join and they're going to be like, oh, my God, this guy really is.
What's to stop your friend paying $10 a month from just telling you the picks?
Yeah. So,
or
yeah,
if
you guys want to send me 10 bucks a month, yeah, I'll tell you who's going to win.
And here's idea too.
Yeah.
So we have a Patreon here at Invest Like a Boss. So if you want to join, it's only $5 a month. So it's a 50% off sale compared to the other guy. And if you want any advice on investing into these other accounts, I have Johnny that is really good at typing no on the keyboard.
Don't do it, guys. Don't do it.
And it's only going to cost you half as much a month.
Yeah. Like whatever your crazy ideas are to invest in, for $5 a month, I would tell you no, don't do it and stick to the game plan.
I love it. That's like when we say, you know, maybe a financial advisor is good for one thing, to tell you, you know, not to sell or not to freak out and panic. I think for $5 a month, you can just have Johnny tell you the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, hold it. Don't panic sell. Keep on track.
I just think we just found some new marketing for Patreon. But seriously, though, if you guys want to join the Patreon, you heard it in the interview that we had questions for Rishi. Those were directly from Patreon members. So if you want to ask questions to these big CEOs and all these guests we're having, you're going to be the first to know in Patreon. If you aren't subscribed to Patreon, you're not going to know who's coming up on the show. I think almost every single guest we have on, I'm posting them in Patreon at least a couple weeks early and giving you a chance to ask these people questions. You'll get a shout out in the episode. It's a pretty cool deal. And, you know, everyone has varied interests. We have topics all over the place. So there's going to be something for sure that you're going to be interested in and want to ask a question. And the way to do it
is
just join our Patreon.
Yeah, 100%. Like for $5 a month, you can ask a CEO a question, and it's pretty much guaranteed we can ask the question unless it's, you know, complete nonsense. But as long as it's on topic, which, you know, I'm assuming it will be, like, we'll ask the question. And if you want, you can record a voicemail and you'll be played on air with your question to the CEO. So the CEO can hear your voice for $5, guys. In today's economy, that's like 3 cents, because with inflation.
Yeah, I stopped at Starbucks and got a medium black coffee, just a drip coffee, Johnny. How much do you think it costs?
Oh, so a medium drip coffee.
A grande, sorry, place, if anybody's freaking out grande, about the Starbucks names.
Okay, so in countries I normally, you know, live in, it'll be maximum $2. What is it there?
Add $1.25 to that $2.
Okay. But you know what? Black coffee is always going to be relatively cheap. But like, I think the better.
$3.25. I can make a whole pot of coffee for $1.
So. Yeah. That's true. But also, like, I think a latte is a better benchmark, because that, like, I've seen lattes go up to like $6, which is insane.
Yeah, those are in the sixes now. And then if you're in like a touristy area, like I go to Vegas a lot, if you're buying anywhere near the strip, you're paying $8-$9 for those.
Oh, well, I just spent two weeks in the UK.
London,
it was
ridiculous.
Insane. It was stupid money.
So I've only been to London itself. Is the rest of the UK just as much?
No, it's much cheaper, especially the north. But unfortunately, nobody wants to go to the north. So
the can't understand south, a word they which, say up there. I'm like, are you speaking English?
Yeah. So I spent a week in the south in Brighton, because it was cheaper because it was off season. I think it's just as expensive during summer, but because, you know, it's fall now, it's a little bit colder, people aren't swimming. It was half the price of London, and it was still expensive. And with the pound being, you know, destroyed now, it's still expensive. So I can't even imagine if it was, you know, $1.60 to the dollar, because now it's like $1.20 or something.
Oh yeah, that's not bad, but it's still, yeah, it feels really expensive. I was there in 2019 and I couldn't believe the prices. Even coming from LA, people are always like, oh, it's so expensive in this city or that city. And I'm like, oh, I live in Los Angeles, it's already expensive. But London, I remember, was a price shocker.
Yeah, it was just insane. I mean, I would even lie to myself and just kind of think of, you know, £1 as $1. You know, just be like, oh, okay, it's a $10 breakfast. But even then, I was like, man, this is getting out of hand. I mean, everything was expensive.
Well, thanks to Rishi for coming on the show. StockTwits, I think, is a valuable tool. One more piece of business before we get out of here, Donnie. The Apple reviews, I don't know, Apple Podcasts has been not the greatest lately. I think that's why a lot of people are jumping over to Spotify. Tons of Spotify reviews. We appreciate that, you guys. If you can give us 5 stars on there, you can't leave a written review, but 5 stars really helps if you do that on Spotify. Those have been growing a lot, but we did finally get a new 5-star review on Apple. They were down for a long time and now they're back. Shout out to Philo. Philo says, love the content, energy, and optimism. Almost all investments are pretty unique, and it feels good to learn about investments you will unlikely see on TV or other mainstream media. 5 stars.
Awesome.
That's everything I got, Johnny. Any other piece of business you want to get before we bounce?
I think that's it with my terrible Wi-Fi here. So till I'm back in Ukraine, where hopefully there'll be good Wi-Fi and some peace.
We will talk to you bosses next week.
See you guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.